Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us at this this session. It's great to see high interest in this topic. I plan to post the PowerPoints and an audio recording next week. Our keynote speaker of an hour ago maybe introduced my topic when he said there's a trade-off between validity and diversity. And I'm going to try to push back at that very common perception. So, why is my slide not advancing? Let's try this again. Okay. So, the impetus for this presentation is clear. We have a societal problem. I'm particularly interested in ways of hiring more Black police officers. Not that that's a panacea, but I think it is a step in the right direction. In general, adverse impact is a legal and social liability. I've done some expert witness on employment selection cases over the years that's led me to reevaluate some of the selection procedures that came to trial and reevaluate some assumptions. And my ideas have evolved over the past 30 years or so. And many of these ideas were presented at IPAC, and you folks have helped me refine them. I appreciate that. So today, I hope to do a little tutorial, starting with foundations, providing some references, but then getting to some sophisticated implications of the statistical relationships between various psychometric variables, and talk about just a few highlights from professional literature, and try to support some new understandings and make the case for some new testing approaches. So let's take a look at the psychometric variables. These should be familiar to you: validity, reliability, utility, selection ratio, standardized mean squared difference, and I'll use this rather than the adverse impact ratio, because it's a much more stable measure of group differences than the adverse impact ratio. And I'll also start looking at composite scores. So, looking at validity, the joint standards, formerly the APA standards, says that it's the degree to which accumulated evidence and theories support a specific interpretation of test scores for a given use of a test. And the SIOP, the SIOP definition, is similar. Reliability, we define reliability different than some other professions, maybe many other professions. We define, some professions sort of use the same term reliability and validity synonymously. We do not. Reliability is the degree to which scores for a group of assessees are consistent over one or more potential sources of error, such as over time, over raters, over test questions. Now, there's a relationship between validity and reliability. So, on the left side of this equation, we have the theoretical validity. In the numerator on the right side, we have the observed validity. In the denominator on the right side, we have the square root of the product of the reliability of the predictor and the reliability of the criterion. And we can use this to correct R. If we have a an observed R and we have the reliability of the criterion, we can predict what the theoretical validity is. We can also manipulate this equation, cross multiply, and we can then see that the observed validity is equal to the true validity times the square root of the reliability. So if the reliability of your test score is 0.6, which unfortunately it often is, particularly for non-multiple choice tests, the validity can be no higher than 0.77, because the square root of 0.6 is 0.77. And when we make decisions as to how to what factors to include in a test battery and how to weight them based on content validity, and we ignore this relationship between validity and reliability, we might be getting into deep trouble. SMEs assume that we ask them to rate KSAPs, that we have reliable measures of these KSAPs, and we may not. Now, test users often assume that high validity results in high job performance. That's not true. High validity does not necessarily mean we will get high job performance. It's utility that tells us about job performance. Validity is only one factor that affects utility. So let's just look at a definition of utility, and PSYOP principles define it as the projected productivity gains due to the use of the selection procedure. And I will focus here on job performance and ignore things like the cost of testing. A textbook by Cassio and Aguina suggests you could also consider diversity in evaluating utility. So what drives utility? There are three things that drive utility: the quality of the applicants, the selection ratio, and validity. And let's take a look at the implications of the quality of the applicants. If you have no good applicants, no matter how many applicants you have, you cannot hire superstars. If all your applicants are great, even if you don't have many applicants, or if you have lots of applicants, all your hires will be great. And you could hire randomly and get great employees. That's completely independent of R. So, a takeaway from this presentation is we must pay attention to recruitment. Unlike the private sector and the public sector, we can't recruit more after we see the test scores. In the private sector, if they recruit and they interview some folks and they say, gee, we have a bunch of turkeys, they go get some more applicants. That's not possible in the public sector. Let's take a look at selection ratio. A lower selection ratio, meaning you hire a smaller percentage of your job applicants, results in a number of things. More disappointed applicants, higher expected job performance, more false negatives. You'll be rejecting people who can do the job. There'll be fewer false positives, people who are hired but can't do the job. And you'll have more severe adverse impact whenever D is greater than zero. And we'll talk about D in a little while. D is a standardized mean score group difference. So the formula for D, the standardized mean score difference, is the difference between the mean for group 1 and the mean for group 2 divided by a pooled estimate of the population standard deviation. And in case you want to carry out this calculation yourself, here it is. And I gave you a source for it. Now, the practical implications for validity are well known. A higher validity results in a higher proportion of true positives and a lower proportion of false positives. And we'll talk about true positives and false positives shortly. But let's take a look at which is more important: Q, the quality of the candidates, SR, the selection ratio, or R, the validity. So in theory, they're all very important. But in practice, R is very hard to change. We have been working for decades and decades on trying to improve the validity of our selection procedures, and we have not gotten very far. We've not made that much progress. It might be that Q and SR are more easily changed. Unfortunately, with a more severe SR, we also get worse adverse impact. And the takeaway again, and we'll get back to this, is that recruitment is extremely important. So let's look at this quantitatively. So you may not be able to see these lines very well on your display. You might be able to, but they're in the order of the legend on the right. And the very highest line is when your selection ratio is 0.05. You pick one person out of 20. And the selection ratio at the bottom is when your selection ratio is 0.95. You're selecting almost everybody. And this family of curves is for the situation when Q is 0.5. That means half of your applicant group can do the job. And if you look at the R values of 0.2 and 0.25, they're sort of in the middle of the x-axis, you can see that when you go from a validity of 0.2 to a validity of 0.25, you're not increasing the percent of hires who can do the job successfully all that much. You might be increasing it by 5%. Putting this into a chart form, if you select all the candidates, 50% of them will be able to do the job, because we made that assumption, the Q is 0.5. If you would choose the top 20% of candidates, selection ratio of 0.2, if your validity was 0.25, your utility would go from 50 to 64. You would improve 14%. If your validity were 0.2, you would improve 11% from 50 to 61%, looking at the top and bottom lines in this chart. So the utility with a Q of 0.5 for R's that are typical are in the 11 to 14% range, which might be important to an organization, but they're not really huge. Now, what happens if your Q goes up to 0.9? You get better job candidates. So if you get better job candidates, if you selected everybody, looking at the bottom line, 90% of them would be able to do the job. If you selected the top 20%, either 95% or 94% would be able to do the job. So you have a much higher chance of getting a good employee when Q is high, but your utility plummets. We went from utility of 0.11 to 0.14, and here we have utility of 0.4 and 0.04 and 0.05. Now let's look at Q. So this is a very informative set of curves. On the x-axis, you have the selection ratio. On the y-axis, you have the percent of hires who can do the job successfully. And each of those lines is a different Q. So no matter whether your selection ratio is very restrictive on the right side of the x-axis, or you're hiring almost everybody on the left side of the x-axis, what's really driving the percent of hires who can do the job successfully is the quality of your applicant group. And this is for one validity. Now, let's take a look at management's view of tests. Management's view of tests is, at least initially, they say, oh, tests work. We're going to recruit lots of applicants, and we'll give them all a test, and we'll hire the best. And the tests are a fair way to hire employees, and we'll hire really good employees. Unfortunately, over time, managers learn the tests don't necessarily work all that well. There are hiring errors. Tests only work to a modest extent. They work, but only to a modest extent. Recruitment should focus on quality, not quantity. No matter what we do, there will be many mistakes in hiring. There'll be false positives, false negatives. We'll look at this soon. And if we omit KSAPs that have a lower D, according to the American Psychological Association, our test is invalid. So on page 21 of the joint standards, it says in the joint standards, if excluding some components, has a noticeable impact on selection rates for groups, and the intended interpretation of test scores would be rendered invalid. We'll come back to this. So I'd like to get into evaluating composite scores and combining tests with lower and higher R, and looking at the utility and the D for a combination of tests with lower and higher R's. And to do this, we need formulas for the validity of a composite, for the D of a composite, for the utility of a composite. And to make it a little easy, we will assume that the two tests we're going to consider are uncorrelated. But the formula I found in Guilford didn't have uncorrelated. So in the denominator, you can forget that term on the very right because it has the correlation between measure one and measure two, and that correlation is zero, so that last term on the bottom is zero and drops out. So the formula for the sum of two weighted measures with a third measure is as is shown here. So if we have two tests, R.25 and R.15, what will happen to the validity? Let's say if we give them equal weight, will the sum of the two variables have a validity in between 0.15 and 0.25, or higher than 0.25 or lower than 0.15? So I'm really asking the question, will a personality test decrease the R that's due to G? So the R for G for police officers is 0.24, according to a meta-analysis that Amat did. Let's call it 0.25, we'll round up. And let's assume that the validity for personality is an R.15. So using that formula a couple pages back, we can see that if we weight the personality test differently, we come up with different R's. So if we weight the personality test at 0.65 and the G test at 0.35, the correlation for the composite is 0.25. And if we weight the personality test 0.5 and the G test 0.5, the validity of the sum is higher than the validity of G alone. So we can maintain validity of our overall selection process and decrease D even if we weight at anything lower than 0.65. Now let's take a look a little bit more at the adverse impact of a composite. And we'll take a simple weighted sum. We'll get the mean and standard deviation from each group. We'll focus on D, and let's see what happens. Well, to do this, we will need another formula. The mean of a weighted sum, and I gave you a reference here, and we need the variance of a weighted sum, and if the two variables aren't correlated, that nasty term on the right becomes zero and drops out. Now, Sackett and Ellingson in 1997 published a very influential article, and some people misread this article to mean that there's a danger of increasing D when we add a low D predictor to a test of G. But the correct takeaway of this article, if you look at the pages 712 and 713 carefully, is that including predictors with small d's, less than 0.4, and personality generally has a d of around 0, if you include a predictor with a small d, you will get a composite that has a lower d than g. It might not be a low enough d to keep you out of court, but it'll be a definite improvement. And Sack and Ellingson gave a formula for that, and there was a typo in the formula, and this this version has a correction to that that typo. And D for uncorrelated variables, two uncorrelated predictors, is very simple because the 2R12 on the right in the denominator becomes zero. So let's see what happens when we actually do this. We will assume that the D for G is 1 and the D for personality is 0. We'll assume tests with R 0.24, 0.25, and R 0.15, and we'll see what happens to the validity and D. I've been zipping through these slides, but this slide we're going to look at slowly. So let's start with the x-axis. The x-axis has the weight of the personality variable. At the left, the weight is 0. On the right, the weight is 1.0. The y-axis, we have the validity of the sum of the two variables. The green curve that starts up at a validity of about 0.3 and drops down to a validity of about, take that back. The green curve you evaluate with the y-axis on the right. The y-axis on the right is D. So when the weight is 0 and you're on the way at the left side of that green curve, the D is 1.0. And that's when you're weighting G completely. If you weight personality completely, you're at the very far right of that green curve, all the way by the x-axis, because D is 0. Okay, the y-axis on the left side is validity, and that goes from about 0 to about 0.3. And the purple lower horizontal line is the validity 0.24 of G for police officer selection. The red horizontal line, a little higher, is the best validity you can get if you combine personality and G, and it's about 0.28. The interesting line is that blue line that we haven't talked about yet, that looks a little bit like a hill, but the going downhill on the right. So at any weight of personality variable between 0 and about 0.65, validity of the sum is greater than the validity of G alone. So if you take a look at where that blue curve crosses the purple horizontal line, that's the weight of about 0.65, 0.7. And then if you drop down, drop a plumb line and see where it crosses the green curve, it crosses that green curve at some point. And if you read over to the right y-axis, it crosses that green curve when D is about 0.4. So if you include a personality variable, you can increase the validity of the composite, and you can reduce the D from 1.0 with G to 0.4. Okay, now, there is reason to think that personality, in fact, and non-G variables are more valid than G. The accepted wisdom for many years was that G was the most highly valid, and other variables trailed well beyond it. So Schmidt and Hunter said 0.51 for ability, 0.37 for assessment answers, but Sackett and his colleagues did some very careful meta-analysis and found that the R for G was 0.22 and 0.44 for assessment centers. Why is my slide not advancing? Okay, let's take a look at a R 0.24. That's a scatter plot. So you only hire people at the upper end. But look at those black dots there. You have a lot of people who are false positives. They fall below that yellow cutoff on job performance. If you select only on G and you have unmeasured abilities, and those unmeasured abilities include abilities that are required for the job, and let's say there are 10% of the people would fail due to their low problem solving or their low oral communication and so on, the true positives have to be attenuated by these additional failures, and you find something like a third of the people lack abilities not tested by the multiple choice test. So the expectancy chart told us that 61 to 64% of the people were true positives, but a third of those are deficient on non-G, so you get down to 42% true positives. More than half the people are expected to fail the job. So the conclusion, most police officer hires, if you hire based on G, will be false positives. With higher Q, we hire better people. We're running out of time, so I won't go through that. Lower validity can have higher utility because many police departments, many larger police departments require a college degree. Well, if you Nassau County, Suffolk County, and Long Island require college credits. If you require a college degree, probably your Q is up around 0.9 for G, but your Q is probably 0.5 or lower for the personality variables. So since there's much more room for improvement with a lower R, you can still have higher utility. So takeaways, validity sums, they don't average. Adding a low validity test improves validity. Recruitment can improve utility more than testing. A low validity test can have high utility. A high validity test can have low utility, and G is not necessarily the best predictor of job performance. So I didn't cover some things because I only had half an hour. I didn't give a lot of numeric examples. I didn't give ideas on ways to reduce adverse impact and real-life applications, but some of this is on my website in other presentations, and I'm presenting at the Society for Police and Criminal Psychology in the end of August, beginning of September, on just this topic. If you have any questions, I'm looking at the chat, but I will see if I can see the chat. And I don't see, I'm failing the intelligence test here. Okay, so it doesn't seem like there are any questions, but this is a topic I love to talk about. If anyone has any questions, feel free to contact me about this at any time, and I'd be pleased to go over the stuff with you and listen to your ideas as well as share more of my ideas.